Welcome to another episode of the Politatine Podcast. You are currently listening to the one-hour segment of our podcast. To listen and watch the full conversation, head over to politatine.com and click the Watch tab in the top right. If that's not your thing, we appreciate you and hope that you enjoy the episode. And we're rolling. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Politatine Podcast. My name is Damian Galvin, and as always, I am joined by my wonderful co-host, Varun.
Hello, everybody. My name is Varun Kadathal, and I'm the co-host of the Politatine Podcast. As you guys know, back for our first episode, Damian, of Season 2 of the podcast. We promised to begin Season 2 after Biden's inauguration, and that obviously happened today if you guys were watching any sort of news channel. So we have two of our friends and guests from Women in Politics in the podcast today to talk about their takes on the inauguration and everything politics right now. Don V and Andrea, if you guys want to introduce yourselves and your initiative real quick, please go ahead.
Yes. Hi, guys. I'm Andrea. And I'm a 16-year-old junior from Corpus Christi, Texas. I'm a co-host on The Breakdown with my good friend, Don B. Shaw, who's here with us today. We talk about evolving political and social controversies, much like Politatine. Don B. and I met while working for a nonprofit called Women in Politics. I was a writer, and Don B. was an events manager. And we kind of just aim to empower within the nonprofit. We aim to empower and educate young girls and minorities interested in a career in politics. After we met and got to talking, we pitched the idea of our podcast to the leaders over at Women in Politics. And we started our podcast in October, and it's going really great. And I'm really excited to be here today with you guys.
Yeah, we are so excited to be on Politatine. We love talking with you guys last week on our podcast. And I feel like we already have so much to talk about. The Breakdown is a podcast that Andrea and I put together, as she said. We basically get together once a month and discuss any compelling political advances or topics from the last few weeks. We're both 16 years old and women of color, so you know that we already have some unique, sometimes tumultuous takes. I'm a high schooler from New Jersey. I love to debate and keep an active eye on politics. You can find our show on any major podcast streaming platform by searching up the Women in Politics, The Breakdown. Thanks for having us, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for joining us. And you mentioned it, you know, two women of color on our podcast. We're two men of color, very exciting people for individuals of all backgrounds today. Obviously, we saw Kamala Harris, the first woman vice president, first woman of South Asian descent to be vice president, first individual period to be of South Asian descent and be vice president, as well as Black and vice president.
A lot of firsts there, Damian.
A lot of firsts. I was counting them off on my fingers, going one by one.
I've heard the term glass ceiling so many times today.
I think we broke through a couple of those. We got some repairs to do.
Right. It's definitely been a day for firsts, but I can't help but feel, I don't know, I feel overjoyed, obviously, because this is a point of change for our country, and I know that change will come. But, you know, just looking back at the last 4 years, they've been overwhelmingly negative for me. And I think I'm looking at this in a very pessimistic way. But, you know, especially in what we do, it's so easy to see all of the negatives that are happening in politics, right? Like, it's all we really focus on. It's really hard to celebrate the highs. But I think this is a moment in our history where we're going to see something happen. And I'm really excited for it, genuinely.
Yeah.
And we're back to reporting on President Biden tomorrow. It's going to be one day of a break for us. I hope it's a little less shaking the past 4 years have been, but I expect a lot going on with the whole COVID recovery being planned out. You saw Biden write out 17 executive orders, I believe, today, reversing Trump's EOs from the past 4 years. And kind of symbolically bringing in that change that he said he would bring in during the inaugural address. But I think it's going to be an amazing, interesting 4 years for us as reporters, all four of us today, being our political commentators. That's our role. So I would love to hear what President Biden has to say and do as we continue. But we saw one of his press conferences earlier, and I want to talk about that later. But what do y'all think about just the whole gist of what was happening in the inauguration, how they had 25,000 National Guard troops outside of the event, no people attending the event? What do y'all think about the whole setting morphed with COVID-19 and the insurrectionists that happened 2 weeks ago?
This country, I mean, this whole year and 2020 have been unprecedented. So I feel like it's only right that the inauguration also reflect that. But it was also really weird to see that happening. You know, people touching elbows instead of shaking hands, and there weren't as many people at the inauguration as there usually are. But I think it set a great tone for Biden's administration as a whole. Seeing how responsible the transition team was being just in terms of the inauguration is pretty telling as to how they're going to behave when it comes to handling the pandemic and race relations as a whole. And we see that already in one of the many, many executive orders he's signed. He's done so much already, and I'm really glad that that was reflected. Everywhere, people all around the world seeing this inauguration were able to see that America's back on the right track.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, we're definitely building back bridges, you know, rejoining the World Health Organization, rejoining the Paris Climate Accord. We're definitely starting off on a really good start.
Yeah, definitely. And I hate to be a negative Andy here, but it's kind of like the claim that I've had in being a little bit more far left than Varun now. But, you know, you first of all, I guess just on terms of the inauguration, I'll start there. Very, very dystopian. You know, you have all these individuals, powerful individuals with masks on, socially distanced, trying to pretend like nothing's wrong, speaking to literally no one. With like 25,000 National Guard troops surrounding them. So in that essence, you know, a little bit out of place, but it's, you know, to be a little bit more positive, I guess it's awesome to be able to see a democratic process still take place during such uncertain times. But, you know, you mentioned the building back of bridges, and I could not be more content that these bridges are being rebuilt. But the goal is not to rebuild bridges, but rather to build new ones, to make greater strides towards being a true democratic nation, as we claim to be, you know, perfecting the union, or at least never giving up on the goal of trying to make a more perfect one. So while we definitely are you know, taking some directions to getting back to the status quo, I guess, pre-2016. The status quo pre-2016 wasn't all that great either. We can always shoot for better, and I think that that's something that's really easy to forget on a day like this. But I don't think that I can be, I don't know if anyone else in this, you know, in this, on this podcast feels the kind of sense of dissatisfaction that I felt. I know it's the first day, but I wasn't as satisfied as I felt I would have been. It might be because, you know, my strong political stances and whatnot. But I don't know. I didn't feel as satisfied as I felt I would have been, especially with all the great, you know, the glass ceilings that were broken today.
I definitely agree.
I mean, yeah, I think it's... Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I definitely agree because I feel like there's... even I was just preaching how change is coming and how exciting this is. But it's really hard to come to terms with the fact that a lot of the issues in our country are systemic, and Biden coming into office, yes, it's very exciting, but we're not going to see immediate change, you know? And it was just Martin Luther King Jr. Day on Monday. So, you know, I was reading through his quotes, through his speeches, and one that stood out to me was the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power. And that really sat with me because, you know, seeing this transition that we're going through, I asked myself, is this a radical redistribution of political and economic power? What are we going to see? And I honestly don't know the answer to that, but I just know that change is going to take time, and it's not like Biden's going to come in and punch racism in the face and suddenly racism is gone and we're a happy utopian society and people aren't homeless anymore and, you know, immigration open to everyone. It's not going to be like that. And that's something that's really hard to come to terms with.
Yeah. And I think I agree there. I think that what Biden has said continuously is that America is the constant pursuit of happiness and not achieving it on day one. We have to continuously search for that happiness and that American vision. I think that him talking about unity so much during today's inaugural speech was quite powerful, simply because, as Damian said, building those new bridges will require unity between Democrats and Republicans. We can't achieve this with a one-party system. We don't have enough votes in the Senate to achieve things as Democrats without bypassing the cloture rule. So I think that we have to build that unity to create real progress. And the number one thing is to stop people like insurrectionists that infiltrated the Capitol just 2 weeks ago. Seeing, I think it was a triumph of democracy, as Damian said. I was actually very satisfied because, you know, 2 weeks ago, we saw people climb up those steps and scream, hang Mike Pence, and scream, hang these senators and Republican and Democratic senators. I think that seeing Biden getting inaugurated with bipartisan support on those steps was quite exhilarating, quite powerful to me. I think that, you know, one of the main things that made me quite happy today was seeing that, you know, Biden and other congressmen and congresswomen and people there have made it painstakingly clear how much progress needed to be done. And Damian talked about them having to hide and trying to hide what the country was in right now. I believe they weren't. I think that them wearing masks and them having 400,000, I believe, or hundreds of flags to represent the people who were missing from the Capitol that day was quite powerful, in saying that we're not normal and we won't be normal until we have a bipartisan support for justice and reform and for wearing masks and for supporting lives. So I think that the point there was that we have to do a lot in these next 4 years, in these next couple of years, to return America to a normal, because right now it has never been more clear. You see, you go to a grocery store, you go to a school. If you have school, there is no normalcy. You have wearing masks have become a norm for most people who abide by the laws and the morals of our society. And it's just very, very clear that there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And I think that I hope that President Biden can work towards that unity that is needed towards to create that reform.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to walk back, I think that it was awesome the way that they comments, but rather walk them forward. I think it was awesome what they did in the display today. I think some parts of it were interesting. Seeing Lady Gaga come out and sing, and Jennifer Lopez, a little bit less so with Jennifer Lopez, but Lady Gaga was definitely an interesting figure to see come out. And you know, I think the flags were awesome. My only thing is it seemed, especially with what Lady Gaga was wearing, very dystopian.
Hunger Games kind of Aberdeen. You thought that, didn't you?
Definitely. What was that?
People are making the tweets already.
Are they? Okay. Well, it's good. You see, we got a creative process here.
Stole my idea.
His mitts and his amazing wow.
Oh yeah, his mittens.
Took over Twitter today.
Bernie.
Yeah, Bernie was on Twitter all day. The mittens. Oh,
man. He was so cute, sitting there with his little, manila envelope. Like, he had just come back from, sending mail. He was just there at the inauguration with his little mask and his mitts and his little coat.
And his parka. Yep.
There was another picture of him holding up his phone as if he was watching something. So I think our fascination with Bernie isn't going to stop anytime soon.
Well, you know, definitely. I think that's maybe for the three of us. I think Varun can disagree with that one.
Well, look, I love Bernie's look today. I'll say that. I'll say that for y'all. I love his look.
He's definitely a style icon. We can all agree on that, right?
Absolutely.
Yes, we can. Absolutely. That's bipartisan.
There you go.
There's unity right there.
Perfect.
I think that there, you know, I think that the message, you know, the message of unity is strong. Before coming down here, I was watching Fox News, and they were like, oh, just because you wish, you know, if you ask for unity doesn't mean that you're going to receive it. It's like, well, yeah, not especially with you idiots just trying to divide everyone. But you know, digressing from that point, I think it was Andrea that mentioned, you know, that the Biden administration isn't just going to come in and punch racism in the face and be like, who's the CEO of racism? Because you're out. Like, that's not what's going to happen. That's not what has happened. We haven't defeated racism. We haven't defeated fascism. And you know, you mentioned the bipartisan approach, and I'm going to have a hot take here. But, you know, we voted for democracy to prevail, allegedly. In this past general election, we voted for our you know, foundation to rebuild our, you know, our foundation and strengthen it and reinforce it, and you know, we voted out fascism, allegedly, right, from the left. But I could not, you know, these messages coming through my head, you know, the idea that, you know, racism might, you know, might cease to exist alongside with fascism and, you know, all other elements of far right politics. with Mitch McConnell on the platform, with Ted Cruz on the platform, with Mike Pence on the platform. You know, we're here talking about the fact that we voted it out. We voted it in too. And that's something that we can't forget. And something that we can definitely not forget is that in many circumstances, including Mitch McConnell and Ted Cruz, they are still in power. You know, and I know maybe the right's going to get upset that, you know, oh, the left calls everything fascism. I think that we can kind of say, or at least I can say, I told you so, when there was literally an insurrection at the Capitol. But, you know, especially with people like, you know, Ted Cruz and Mitch McConnell, I said it on the podcast before, and I'll say it again. Donald Trump would have no legitimacy if it wasn't for them. If it wasn't for them yes-manning him. If it wasn't for them hyping him up. They are just as, you know, just as much to blame as Donald Trump is, and let alone Mike Pence. Because up until 2 weeks ago, he was also perpetrating the or also spewing the lie of you know, voter fraud. So sure, we have maybe taken one baby step in the right approach, but we definitely have to run, and we have to start sprinting towards the center, at least relatively quickly.
For sure. Definitely. I mean, at the end of the day, we are leaving a presidency where Donald Trump attacked truth seekers. And this attack could have been prevented, like you said. I think if people didn't, and Dombey said this on our episode, our last episode, if people were not complacent to it, we just kind of, well, not we, but people just sat around as he continued to spew these lies. You know, he's been found to have said false or misleading claims greater than 30,000 times during his presidency. And we just kind of let this happen. And no one said, like, obviously we talked about truth decay on our episode and all of this stuff, but it's just kind of happened. And no one pointed a finger. It's like no one was concerned enough about this. And now it's something that we're going to have to build back, because while Trump was attacking truth seekers, not because they were incorrect, but because they threatened his platform, now there's a massive group of people that do not feel secure in journalism, in our journalism, in our science, in our medicine. And that's going to be a lot to come back from. And our country has to heal from that.
And I think it's so funny that he keeps perpetrating this. Despite his Twitter getting banned, he's banned from all these social medias. And today during his farewell address, he said something along the lines of, some way or another, this will come back. So I thought that was really funny. And it was delusional to me, really, because, mm-hmm. you know, that was his last day in office. Every single big news network said so. They were like, this is the last time that Trump is leaving the White House as the president, because as everyone knows, he's likely not going to win another election ever again, at least legally. So I think today, him not coming to the inauguration, him being one of the very few sitting presidents that are still alive, not coming to his successor's inauguration, I think he's ruining his own credit for that among the people who actually matter. People, like, I hate to say this, but like Mitch McConnell actually matters. I think it was telling maybe to the Republican Party, seeing that Mike Pence carried out all the traditions that were traditionally supposed to be done by the president, like Vice President Harris and the second gentleman, Douglas Emhoff, walked former Vice President Mike Pence and his wife, Karen Pence, down the stairs when that was supposed to be the sitting president and the former president, who would have been Donald Trump. So just, again, breaking these traditions, but not in a good way this time.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think that upon what Damian said, I'm going to address a couple of points here. Upon what Damian said, I think that we should stray away from pinpointing people. Mitch McConnell, Ted Cruz are just figureheads of what their voters believe in. And the idea is that we have to change voters' minds and a radical shift in American, you know, where Americans get their news from, what they believe in terms of truth. We have to shift those things before we pinpoint heads of authority. I think that it takes, once again, a radical shift, but that radical shift is only achieved once we have a moral ground upon which we can all stand upon. I think that I keep mentioning this on every single episode of Politine, and even on your episode, guys. It's the idea that we have to have a moral compass that guides us. Regardless of if we're Democrat or Republican, we have to have that same constitutional obligations and moral compass. You know, I know that Mike Pence wanted to be vice president today. He wanted to be inaugurated, but he put that aside. He put his moral or his ideological viewpoints aside to take out and carry out his constitutional obligations. I think the Republicans need to do their duty, and more Republicans voters have to shift to understanding those obligations. Instead of demagoguery and cultism, I think that what Trump has pervaded over the past couple of years has been this demagoguery mindset. It always reminds me of what I saw during the Obama and Romney debates when, you know, the commentator on one of the major news channels, I think it was MSNBC or something, she fact-checked Romney on the stage. And Romney went into a frenzy talking about, I was on my talking points, getting that out there, but she fact-checked me and that ruined my argument. That's the media against the people. And really, it's not. It's truth against lies. And I think that if we can revive that mindset of truth against lies with the President Biden and his administration, that should be a victory for democracy. We have to rebuild that. And you saw Trump's, you know, defiance of his constitutional obligations, his traditional obligations. When he didn't attend the inauguration today, he came out to his own ceremony, his own military-esque farewell today with the YMCA song playing in the background. I thought it was just like a campaign rally is what CNN was saying. And I thought it was quite a big rebuke of what the president's job should be in modern times. And so I think that everything that we've been talking about today is symbolic of how much reform needs to be done. And I think that to go back on my previous point, it has to begin with the people, with constituents and with ideas and what we try to pervade as in our policies and our moral ideological standpoints.
In certain respect, I agree with you, but you know, I guess just to name one statistic here, it's like when 75% of the population wants Roe v. Wade to be the law of the land and Mitch McConnell's holding that back, I don't think you can necessarily blame his constituents. You know, when not particularly all of Ted Cruz's constituents agree with overturning the election, but yet he goes on and, you know, forgets his spine at home and goes onto the Senate floor and does what, you know, Ted Cruz does. I don't know if you can particularly blame his constituents. The only thing I think in that circumstance you can blame his constituents for is not holding their elected official accountable. And I think that that's something that we cannot forget to do with Joe Biden. I think that holding him accountable is crucial to actually seeing change. I had this thought, and I'd love to hear your guys' input on it. But the thought essentially goes like this. Under a Republican presidency, under a Republican administration, you know, Republican leadership, things change because issues are brought to the spotlight because, you know, Republican presidents typically serve as catalysts towards these issues. They typically cause them. So things change in that regard. And with that, typically a Democratic president is then elected to replace the Republican president. And then the issues kind of just get shushed. They don't go away. They most definitely do not go away. Systemic racism doesn't end when, you know, a Democrat is elected president. But they're not brought to the spotlight. I don't know if necessarily our... Sorry, that was my dog. I don't know if necessarily our media is to blame for that. I don't know if we're to blame for that. I don't know if it's literally the fact that Republicans just oftentimes kind of suck at doing their jobs and cause a lot of these problems. But we have to make sure that as I said, bridges are being built, not just rebuilt.
Yeah, and you're saying that because we know that historically the same thing happened after the transition between the Bush administration and the Obama administration, right? As you said, nothing really changed. It was interesting to see, like after 9/11, people, I would say that a lot of brown people, a lot of people of color, especially were targeted and persecuted because of 9/11. And even though that was subdued after the Obama administration, I think it wasn't brought to light. Still, there were still bombings of the Middle East and stuff. So to that point, Damian, like, we know this. Historically, that's exactly what happens. Every single time we want change, it never comes.
For sure. Let's take this back further. US history moment, guys. We're going back to the Civil War era, okay? It's the Gilded Age to the Forgotten Presidents. And, you know, we have Republican presidents for the most part. But then, you know, we have the common people and we have like the Interstate Commerce Act of 1877. And at this point, we see a major shift in our politics, right? We see the stance, which is still present now. Democrats become the party of the common man because they value.
Hold on, Andrea. You're cutting out a little bit.
She's all right for me.
Was she all right for me? Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure. Perfect. No worries.
Okay, sorry to be on my history tangent, but the Democrats become the party of the common man because, you know, they believe the government has a duty to protect the people over private enterprise, right? And the Republicans become the party of enterprise with railroads and Wall Street and whatnot. And we still have this issue today. It's literally 1877. That's when the Interstate Commerce Act happened. And that's when the Democratic Party had that more, populist stance, right? Because that's what happened. The Democrats split and then there was a populist party and then they got together again. And so it's crazy to think about the fact that this was an issue in 1877. And it's still an issue now. Now it's become more like, oh, the left is so socialist because they want healthcare and they want housing. But it's the same problem that there was in 1877. Like, we just can't pick how far left or how far right we want our mixed economy to be. And it's so crazy to think that I'm literally sitting here in 2021, reading my U.S. history textbook, listening to debates happening about the evils of socialism and communism and how bad capitalism and a free market is. And they are the same exact arguments that we were having in 1877. How can it be that we have not progressed past that? And I think it's partly because of our two-party system. It's so hard to get anything done because we are constantly against each other, even on like basic moral standpoint. I think we could get so much more done if we just agreed on one thing. Like, if we both sides agreed that the government has a duty to protect the people over private enterprise, we would not have this whole debacle about socialism and capitalism and free market or mixed economy. How far left should we go? How far right should we go? It's just that one point of agreement could help us come together so much more.
Yeah. I mean, I thought I was the only history buff on this podcast. I guess I'm not. That was amazing. Good history lesson for all of us. Hey, and Damien. But speaking of history, guys, I know Damien is as well. I missed you, Damien. I apologize for that. But speaking of history, I'm in AP European history. I'm learning Gov this year. And one of the main things that I saw with Trump for the past 3 or 4 years has been, for the most part, his idea of Machiavellianism. Right. And Machiavelli made the idea that a leader should evoke fear in his constituents as opposed to love. And he should make decisions where the ends justify the means. So doing whatever it takes to reach that certain end. And I think that has been exemplified by Trump throughout his presidency. He had no care for what it took to get an action done. You saw that with the economic deregulations and rollbacks with the EPA, with COVID-19 to stimulate economic growth. And the environmental, you know, rollbacks during this crisis. And I think that he just has no care for what it really does take to govern a country. Because public service, it requires a intent focus upon the details about, you know, what you do to achieve a certain purpose. In public service, the means do really justify the end. And that's the real history here. And I think that seeing the difference between Trump and Biden is quite incredible. You saw Biden come out today and even yesterday in Delaware talking about just how much he cares for his citizens, the people of Delaware, the love that he has in his eyes is quite incredible. Just because Biden's the kind of person you can call up and talk to on a weekend is how I like to think of him, almost like a George W. Bush kind of feeling that many constituents had talk about Bill Clinton and George W. Bush, the same mindset they pervaded is what I see in Biden today. I think that that's the kind of vision he's putting forward for America, the vision that you can call your president up, the vision that your president loves you as if he were you. And I think that it's a vast difference between the Machiavellianism that was Trump for the past 4 years. And I just think historically that has been something that we've been focusing upon for so long. And speaking of the Delaware address yesterday, I thought it was quite incredible. I don't know if you guys watched that address, but Biden talked about how Delaware will always be in his soul, be written on his soul when he dies. And it brought tears into the audience members' eyes and even Joe Biden's eyes. He was streaming with tears like I've seen nobody streaming with tears. And so I think that just the radical transition in morality and in the hardened side of the president, it's quite emotionally moving for me as a person watching this from the third person view and as a political commentator.
The only real emotion that I've seen from Donald Trump is in that picture where he's coming back from a rally that got hijacked, for lack of better terms, by the teens on TikTok.
y'all remember how sad he was getting off his private plane after TikTok just completely ruined his rally? He was so sad. And it was so fun.
Yeah, it's one of our graphics for one of our episodes, actually, after the Tulsa rally.
Oh, it was. Yeah, it was. You're right.
It's just so funny. Go ahead, Dombi.
On a lighter note, Andrea, I was just going to talk about how we were talking earlier about how today was probably one of the most achieving days in Trump's presidency, at least for Andrea and I, because, you know, being staunch liberals, we were surprised by the 31 nonviolent drug crime pardons that Trump issued today, you know, amongst, you know, the bad one of Steve Bannon. So Andrea, if you want to expand on that a little bit, just all together, we thought that Kim Kardashian's presence here.
I mean,
pretty strong.
Kim Kardashian went off in getting those pardons. I mean, I think that Donald Trump would not have done that many pardons if it wasn't for Kim Kardashian. So, Kim Kardashian, if you ever listen to the Polititeen podcast, I don't know if you will, but thanks. We think you're pretty cool.
Adding Snoop Dogg there too. He got two people pardoned today.
Didn't he also get Lil Wayne?
He got Lil Wayne and Kodak Black.
He got my boy Lil Wayne.
Snoop Dogg advocated for Lil Wayne and Kodak Black.
I thought that Joe Exotic was supposed to get pardoned. Was he not?
I heard. No, he was not. And that was one of the main surprises of today.
What?
Another surprise,
Joe Exotic went on to say that it was because he was too gay.
What?
Well, who's too gay? I just heard too gay. I missed out on the
word. Joe Exotic.
Oh, Joe Exotic didn't get pardoned because he's too
gay. No.
Yeah, that was his own reason for it.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of gay, we had the first gay cabinet member appointed. I mean, he's going to be appointed soon. Pete Buttigieg
Transportation, right? Jesus.
Transportation. Gotcha. But that's quite an incredible discovery. Thinking about like how much diversity is in Biden's cabinet, I think that he said it would mirror America. And I think that it has mirrored America. We saw the highest ranking, as Damian said, woman in politics. As you know, you guys, this podcast is called Women in Politics. The highest ranking woman in politics was Kamala Harris, who was inaugurated today. And it was incredible seeing the diversity on the steps of the Capitol. I'm looking down, seeing Ilhan Omar clapping on President Biden, seeing Bernie Sanders in his mittens and parka clapping on President Biden, and seeing Republicans and Democrats come together and clap for Mike Pence to come up on the stage and deliver that oath with Sonia Sotomayor. But I think that it was just a lot of firsts today, thinking about diversity as a whole. I think we can build upon it, though. I think that we saw a lot of firsts, but we can see a lot of seconds in the next 4 years, in the coming years, as we continue to elect progressives, Democrats to office. And I think that the road ahead is by painting America blue. It is by empowering our next generation to paint America blue, because we have the paintbrushes here. We can really make change happen, as we're all Gen Zers. And Gen Z, as I said on your episode with Women in Politics, is the generation of Democrats. You know, we have tons and tons of Democrats in this generation. I believe only one state is Republican within Utah. Gen Z. So we have Utah, exactly. So we have the tools to make this our time. And I think that if we take advantage of them, we can really create lasting change for centuries to come.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you want to know? Topic of first, sorry.
Yeah, go for it.
I think Rachel Levine deserves a pretty special mention here as the first ever transgender person to be to be selected as a health official on the national level. She is Biden's pick for Assistant Secretary of Health. So I thought that was extremely cool. Sorry, you can go on, but I really
no.
just...
You see, you see what was going to happen is I was going to go, you know, some of the tools that we're using here, Varun, are Anchor, and without it, but now, like, you know, that's kind of a bad transition into a sponsor after you just shouted out the first transgender cabinet member.
Okay, we can continue. We're at that point.
Yeah, but some of the tools that we do use are Anchor. Anchor is a platform that me and Varun use to record our podcast. We put it out to you guys through Anchor. That gets it out to Spotify, that gets it out to Apple Podcasts, any platform that you're listening on. Anchor makes it extremely easy for us to be able to get amazing content to you guys out bi-weekly. They really support us, and they make sponsorships extremely easy. They make editing the podcast super easy. They make putting in clips super easy, and they make your guys' listening experience extremely easy by just literally taking the podcast to whatever platform you enjoy. You wanna give it like the little, what's the clothesline that we have to give it to, Varun?
I apologize, I was writing in some notes. Our clothesline is to say go to anchor.fm or download the Anchor app to use Anchor and make your own podcast about anything. It can be politics, it can be sports, it can be cooking, it can be anything. Anything you want to make a podcast about, go ahead, go to anchor.com, download the app to produce those podcasts. We can get back to the podcast now, Damian. On to the point that Donnie was mentioning about diversity in the White House now.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think that it's an important pick, especially again, I've gone so far, like I am a like splatter dot on the spectrum of politics. I've been on the right. I've been ashamed to say in certain circumstances on certain issues, I have almost touched the far right. And I think that as I've grown older, I think that a lot of kids, this is something we can talk about definitely. But unfortunately media has pushed a lot of far right, theories and far right politics. And I think that a lot of our youth is falling subject to that. And I think that that can be something that we, you know, just in contrast to what Varun was saying, Gen Z is definitely going to be a very blue and progressive and leftist generation, most definitely leftist. But there might be a few very strong alt-right individuals. So that's something to also take into consideration. But as someone that's come, you know, from all sides of the spectrum on different issues and on different stances, I always say that LGBTQ plus rights are one of the stances that I was and still continue to be, I think, least informed on. And I think that it's crucial that there is this representation of a transgender woman, especially a transgender woman in one of these positions, because especially in a health position, because it's something that's so misunderstood. I saw, you know, again, Fox News. I watch too much Fox News, guys. I'm going to have an aneurysm. But I was watching Fox News and they were like, we got to make sure that taxpayer dollars aren't going to abortions. A far right stance, I don't know if particularly Fox News has ever stated it, but a far right stance is, well, if they give free health care to everyone, you know, transgender individuals are going to use it to you know, perform their surgeries. And I think that understanding the mental benefits to this and the benefits to society of you know, going through the full transformation, if that's what you want, are important. And I think that the first steps are to have representation in positions of power.
For sure. I definitely feel you, Damian, on how you're talking about previously having opinions that were definitely very far right. I have a lot of personal experience coming from Venezuela, which we talked about a little bit after filming our last episode. But I definitely, like, I was in diapers and I knew that Hugo Chavez and Nicolas Maduro were treacherous pieces of poop. They sucked. And socialism was bad, and it destroyed Venezuela, it destroyed my country, and we had to come here. And that was my view. Genuinely, that's what I thought. And obviously, like, that's what I grew up around. My family still thinks this. But I've come, it made me really interested in economic theory. And so I started to look into these things. Also on, like, the topic of abortion, because Venezuela is a Catholic country. I am Catholic, and I was raised thinking that abortion was wrong and not good, and we shouldn't encourage abortions, right? And, you know, after coming here to the United States and also just educating myself a little bit more, I realized, okay, socialism is not as scary as a thing that people make it out to be. Chavismo is terrifying and it destroyed my country. But there's two separate things that we need to discuss going into that topic. But also talking about abortion, you know, there's a whole defund Planned Parenthood thing. Well, no, we shouldn't defund Planned Parenthood. We should put more money into it so that we can have preventative things, so we can have a middle ground, right? Because there's one side that thinks abortions are wrong and one side that thinks abortions are fine, but it's a moral issue. And on one hand, we have the basis, you know, on the far right, even people on the far right can say, okay, if a woman is raped and she wants to get an abortion, that is perfectly fine. I think that is the minimum. Okay, let's find the maximum. Let's find the maximum, and then let's find a middle ground between those two. Let's not get rid of Planned Parenthood. Let's keep abortions, but let's put more money into preventative, like actual sex ed. You know that sex ed is not a thing in some states? It's crazy. There's just like abstinence education.
Georgia.
Georgia is one of those states. They teach us abstinence insane. As opposed to, it's insane.
Why Texas is an abstinence state. I didn't know that there was sex ed until like a couple, probably like 2 years ago. Isn't that crazy?
We have sex ed and it's all abstinence training. And so it's insane.
Abstinence training. They teach us how to be virgins.
I mean, they do. They make us read 50-page manuals, paper, picture books about abstinence.
They make us grow like little mustaches that just look absolutely just like male birth control. That's all they teach us. Just like what's it called? Repulsion measures. They teach us how to dress bad and everything.
Wouldn't that work amazingly?
That's what they do, man. They taught me like to wear jean shorts and.
No. Absolutely.
That's why I got an A. I was rocking in with the jean shorts and a flannel on top.
Oh man, how screwed is our state? I think that, you know, beyond sex ed, to go back to your point actually about abortions, Damien knows this. I was quite the conservative on abortions just a couple of months ago. I wasn't obviously pro-life, but I was pro-choice with a couple of, limited field. I was pro-choice in terms of rapes, incest, and death. And then I talked to our new congresswoman in the state of Georgia, Nikema Williams. And she told me that, you know, Varun, if you're pro-choice and only those exceptions, what do you think happens if a woman, if you make, you know, abortions illegal in other instances? Does a woman just stop having abortions? No, she doesn't. She goes out and gets a hanger and does it herself. And she may kill herself doing that.
Right.
And so for me, it was simply the idea that logically, being pro-life does not work. Right. Think about it in countries like, for example, like you said, I believe Venezuela has banned all abortions, and the rate of women dying from putting in these hangers and doing their own abortions is extremely high. You see women incarcerated for even the thought of having an abortion in that country. And it's extreme control. You talk about Republicans being pro small government. That is the least pro small government thing I've seen from the right side. In Georgia, obviously, sex ed was a complete folly in our state. Talk about, beyond that, just personal finance training across the nation. One thing that I've been an advocate for my entire life has been that we have to have more of a focus upon economics in our schools and curriculums, because so many African-American children, minority children, for example, grow up in these inner city homes without knowing what it takes to get them out of their financial predicaments that they're in today. And so I think that we have to employ a greater focus upon personal finance training to give them the tools they need to really pursue jobs in the workforce, create a better focus upon vocational training, as President Biden, how good is it to say that, but President Biden has promised to do during her 4 years in office. And so I think it's quite big, once again, radical, the changes that are needed to move this nation towards a better place in society.
For sure.
As long as we're sharing political histories, though, I think it's worth it to tell you guys that I considered myself a libertarian for a pretty long time. I've always been really far left on the social issues, but I was convinced that, like, taxes should go towards helping, like, me, and that's it. But that definitely changed. As you guys said, with education, like at the end of the day, that's all you really need. I do Model UN. So I think doing Model UN and Model Congress, seeing how different situations have played out historically was eye-opening for me, to say the very least, because I wrote entire economic papers, and then I studied the current political climate, and that got me more into taking more history classes. I took AP Push, AP World, and I'm going to take AP Euro, AP Gov, AP Macro. That's, as you guys have probably figured out by now, like, I love history and economics as a whole. And it's education altogether that really changed my worldview. And now, as you guys know, I'm a liberal, verging on leftist maybe. And maybe more education will change that one too.
Yeah, well, that's what I keep saying. And I don't know, Varun keeps disagreeing with me. I'm happy that you guys are in here having my takes, but I'm saying, God, you guys are gonna hear my dog playing with her squeaky toy, but I keep saying that, you know, some Republicans don't have, you know, it's not necessarily that they're bad individuals. It's that they just have been miseducated. And oftentimes either require education to begin with, unfortunately, or require re-education on a lot of issues. A lot of them just look at kind of like the, I guess, you know, to use some legal jargon here, they just look at the kind of the prima facie case, you know, the case made on its face. And they just say, you know, again, like I always use, because I think it's the most like perfect example of a Republican thought process. You know, racism isn't real because my daughter goes to school with black kids. And the issue there is the misunderstanding towards systemic racism and how that is a problem. And, you know, obviously there are individuals, and I mention these individuals every time I talk about this, that are literally just bigots or ignorant by choice. But I would like to think, and maybe, you know, maybe this is maybe the ideological socialism that Varun talks about that I might have in me, but I would like to think that the majority of people aren't idiots or bigots.
Hopefully not.
Yeah, I would hope not. But to go on from that, I definitely think that it starts with education, and not only education, but realizing that even like our views on education could be wrong. And there's another side to that. Like, even the right feels threatened by liberal education, right? That's like a whole thing. Donald Trump with his executive order, with the 1776 commission. How crazy was it that we were literally about to have education be, history be rewritten so that our founding fathers would be considered heroes? And obviously our founding fathers are pretty cool guys, but like, they weren't perfect. And, you know, reading that executive order, it honestly made me really terrified of what, like, how they were changing the historical narrative, because it was a historical narrative that had made me, you know, form my own political identity. Could it be that we are not seeing that education is too far left? I don't know, but I think change starts with education. And not only that, but like, seeing more than yourself. You know, you can't just look at your environment and think this is all of America. And going back to the Gilded Age, sorry guys, I just love talking about post-Civil War America.
Please.
You know, like, we had the whole idea with the corporations and these railroad moguls, right? That were making millions. We had our first millionaires. This whole thing of natural selection in our class system, right? Because if you were rich and you made money, then you were strong and the poor were lazy, and you earned your spot as a rich person in America. And that's, they used like Charles Darwin to justify this whole like class system that we have. But that's not correct. It's not that simple, you know? It's not like, oh, a poor person is lazy and a rich person is works hard and whatever. That's not how it is. There's so many circumstances and there's so many hurdles. And I think that's one of the basic moral things that we all have to agree on in America. Some people have obstacles and some people have advantages. And we need to make this about being able to support the people that have obstacles, because most of those obstacles are things that should not be obstacles, like racism or having a teen pregnancy and not being able to get an abortion. Like, that is ridiculous. We should not have that in our country. And I really hope that we are taking a step in the right direction with Biden, because I really want to see change. Once again, since the Gilded Age, since 1877, why is this still a problem? It's 2021.
Absolutely. I agree on every single standard there. And I think I'm having a little bit of an echo, but I'm going to continue here talking about re-education, the idea that Trump proposed, the preposterous idea that Trump proposed during his presidency. It was incredibly just weird seeing that he was proposing re-education. That's something that I would see from a country like China, a country like North Korea, nations that do not stick with our moral or political codes.
You mean fascist states, Varun?
Fascist states, absolutely. That's what I meant. I was giving examples.
It's almost fascist. How weird.
Yeah, almost. But I think that it was so weird seeing the 1776 project being displayed in that way and in forum. I want to talk about the project today. The fact that one of the central aspects of that project was the idea that American history curriculums only mentioned slavery to discuss the effects of slavery, not the actual realities of people being whipped and killed to promote that cause, people being sold as literal property to promote that cause. I was looking into our U.S. history curriculum for a project I was doing last year about social justice and education in our county and district, and I was looking at why and when they mentioned history in history slavery. And the only times that the history curriculum in Georgia mentioned slavery in the U.S. history standards was when they were talking about the effects of slavery and what the political ramifications, the economic ramifications of slavery, but they didn't ever mention the fact that people were literally sold and killed and maimed and whipped and raped for this cause. Yeah. And it baffles me that I was reading up on a certain study that said that the majority of Americans really don't even know why the Civil War happened. They believe it may have been because of state rights. Well, no, it wasn't. It was because of slavery. What were those states' rights that they were trying to uphold? It was slavery.
Yeah, the states' rights.
And so it baffles me just how, and in re-education, it baffles me just how uneducated Americans are. And so talking about a liberal curriculum, our curriculum right now is conservative. That's my idea, especially in the state that I'm in right now, Georgia. We have a conservative curriculum. Talking about slavery twice only to talk about the effects, that's conservative, right? And so the idea is that we have to have more of a focus upon America's shortcomings in the past, because what is the best indicator? I know Andrea and Damien and all you guys can agree with me on this, but what is the best indicator of where we have to improve in this nation? It's the past. What's the best indicator of policies we have to implement? It's the past. And so without a focus upon history and a collective understanding of what obstacles and shortcomings we face in the past, we can't succeed today. And so we have to have a common understanding of one, morals, two, history, and three, truth versus fiction. And for so many Americans, that just has not been there over the past 4 years. Truth decay, as I mentioned on the podcast last week, has just been apparent and within our system. Systemic truth decay is what I call it. I think that we have to broadly just step away from that, have more of a control upon the facts that we're getting. You may call that, you know, fascist, socialist to a sense, but that is really how we control the American people's adherence to the truth and moral compass that we try to pervade and put out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've been having a little bit of a history lesson here, so I think I'll flex some of the history knowledge, at least my bias towards it. You know, obviously it's important in talking about an inauguration because the president hasn't really done anything yet. You know, we can only look and hope to see what he's going to do. We talk about the truth decay, and we often, I think, unfortunately, associate the truth decay beginning or being, pushed and almost, you know, Trump being the catalyst for the truth decay initiative. And, you know, I said that it kind of started a little bit more with Mitch McConnell. But the truth is it started after, World War II in the Cold War. It started with the Red Scare that, unfortunately, you know, you're talking about this education program, Varun, and the need for re-education. Well, the reason that we need re-education is because we wrongly educated a whole generation of Americans onto what, you know, socialism entails, onto what communism entails, onto what critiquing, more importantly, more so than, you know, informing individuals wrongfully about socialism and communism, we inform them wrongly about capitalism and how we must not critique this system that we hold so near and dear to our hearts, this democratic system. You know, again, history buffs will remember the most change we ever saw in the United States of America was in the years that FDR served with the New Deal. And this was completely shot down afterwards. As a matter of fact, well, it was the was it not the 22nd Amendment that stops presidents from serving more than two terms officially? Was implemented because what? Sorry, what was it? Varun, hello.
Okay, I believe so. 22nd Amendment.
Sorry. I thought you were gonna fact check me. I was like, yeah. Which one? But either way, you know, they implemented this 22nd Amendment or you know, the amendment, fact check me on that, the amendment that limits a president to two terms because of the fact that FDR passed socialist reform and socialist policies. And on, you know, in the East, so was China. And so, or sorry, so was Russia. And so we have to re-educate on every aspect. We have to re-educate the fact that you know, America isn't perfect, the fact that, you know, not all societies that aren't democratic or aren't capitalist are flawed, or that are not flawed or are critically flawed, I guess, in a sense. You know, you want to talk about truth decay, we got to talk about the war on drugs. You want to talk about truth decay, you got to talk about you know, the war on terrorism. You want to talk about truth decay, you have to talk about all of these different initiatives. Vietnam, North Korea, there has been truth decay, and we have told these stories from the bias of, you know, I'm going to say the capitalist bias, but the capitalist bias is linked directly with the American bias. You want to talk about truth decay? Let's talk about, you know, me and Varun, we were having this conversation earlier about the true Martin Luther King Jr., a man that had not one dream, but two. One of which was socialist and caused him to literally be put on the communist watch list and have his phone wiretapped for years. But this is all truth decay. We have altered the truth in order to fit a narrative that makes us feel more comfortable as Americans. And I think it was, who was the individual? Was it not... the quote here, Varun, you can check me on the quote, but it's if there is no one in your way, then you're going the wrong way, or something like that. If you're, do you know what quote I'm talking about here?
I have no idea, but I'll fact check. Okay. You have the internet.
Well, there you go.
Head.
You know what? It works either way. If no one's standing in your way, then you're not going anywhere. I think that was the quote. And I think that we have,
that's Robert Kennedy. That was in our Lang class, Damien.
There you go, Robert Kennedy. You're right. It was. Yeah. You know, if no one's standing in your way, then you're not going anywhere. And I think that American history has been taught that, you know, to not challenge us, to not say that there's anything standing in our way when, you know, that's just not true.
Yeah, I definitely couldn't agree more. And I think that people like Alex Jones and InfoWars, for one example, have been putting out theories, conspiracy theories, for the most part, that have prompted people to go out and commit acts of insurrection, of violence against our senators and congressmen and congresswomen. I cannot believe what kind of a situation we're in today, with both sides being on polar extremes, and moderationism being extremism in our nation. And I think that it's just a lesson for all of us to understand and learn from today. But just to end our podcast out today, I wanted to ask you guys, being our guests on the podcast, if you guys had any word, saying, phrase, or topic from yourself that you'd like to say to America's youth listening to our podcast today.
I think for me, the most important thing I'd say is educate yourself. If there's anything that we established on this episode today, you know, school isn't reliable. go out, get your own information, and then try to take that political stance test again. I'm sure you're going to see at least a little bit of a difference. I think it's all about pursuing what you're really passionate about. And for a lot of people, they don't realize that's like politics until they actually do it. So just go out there, educate yourself, and that's it. Thank you for having us.
Yes. Wait, can I'm going to add my message to the world. My message to the world. Here's my message. First of all, Dombey is right. You know, we can't trust everything that is said to us. Don't blindly believe what anybody says. Go out there, do your own research, educate yourself, but also stay in school. Don't drop out of school. Get educated. Also, just try to stay informed. I know it's so hard, and honestly, it's so tiring for me to wake up every single day and go on all these news sites and Twitter and see what's going on in the world. But I think it's really important to stay informed. And also, you only live once. So YOLO. Thank you.
Oh, there you
YOLO
go.
YOLO, guys. I want to end here by saying that me and Damon go on New York Times and Washington Post every single night and look at articles from them for at least, I think we spend an hour on it, Damien. I spend an hour at least. He probably spends more, but I read 10 articles a night just to get myself informed about politics today. So you go out, read some articles, and get informed, as Andrea was saying.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the best way to get informed here is something that me and Vroom talk about all the time. It's going out and having conversations like the one that we had here on this podcast. Go out and have conversations with your neighbors, with your friends, with individuals that you might consider your adversaries. Oftentimes, we find that those conversations are the ones that challenge us the most and put someone in our way to let us know that we might be going down a path that is, truthful and honest. And oftentimes, they also might challenge us and show us that we're wrong. So it's important to go out and have conversations, look at different perspectives, and understand that that we're all each other on a different day. As Simon said, one of our past guests, we're all each other on a different day. And today, we were all Americans, and we all got to watch the President of the United States, the 46th President of the United States, be inaugurated. A historic moment, a moment that I was glad to be able to talk about with the women in politics, Varun Kadathala, always adding to the conversation here. Thank you so much for that to everyone here. And to our guests listening, be sure to go follow everything that we're doing. Be sure to go listen to us on Women in Politics. We have that on our social media platforms that you guys can find. That's both at Politatine. That's Politatine Show at Politatine Show, both on Instagram and Twitter. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for tuning in to yet another episode of the Politatine Podcast. That concludes the hour segment of this podcast. To listen to or watch the remainder of this episode, head over to Politatine.com and click the Watch tab in the top right. Beyond that, thank you for listening to another episode of Politatine.